Welcome to University Library 2030, the podcast about the university library who has to innovate due to the rapid changes in technology and the values and policy landscape of research and education. I am Maurice van der Feesten.
And I am David Oldenhoff, and today we're going to talk about the future of research support.
What does the ideal picture of research support look like in 2030? What are the factors driving change today? What is the legacy of the past and what makes change difficult? And what will it take to get there?
This we discuss with our guests, Yuri Bot, Vice Director of the University Library of Vrije Universiteit Amsterdam and Head of the Research Support Department.
And Aaron Tay, Senior Assistant Director on Library Data and Services at the Singapore University of Management, founding member of the Open Abstracts Initiative, advisory board member of CORE, the world's biggest aggregator of open access papers, and a writer of the blog Musings About Librarianship.
To begin with, Aaron, can you explain in two sentences what we actually mean by research services within the context of the university library?
The most obvious answer is that it's basically services provided by the university library to assist researchers in their research activities. The whole digital services infrastructure part is due to the fact that much of research now involves heavy usage of text mining, machine learning, and often requires infrastructure and skills and services that a typical researcher might not have. Some libraries do provide support in that direction, such as digital scholarship or digital humanities. As for why such a service is required, basically doing research is getting more and more complicated. There are more new technologies, there are more requirements in terms of reproducibility. No single researcher can have the knowledge to actually understand all the complexities of this jungle of. And the library, as someone who is neutral and generous, is able to provide support in all these areas that the typical researcher would not be familiar with. Yeah.
Yuri, do you have anything to add to that perspective?
No, I think it's a quite good view of the current landscape. And I think we're at the dawn of a new age where all these new technologies will have a huge effect on how we as research libraries will need to operate. And I think that's an exciting time on the one hand. On the other time, it also requires libraries to reinvent themselves again.
Yes.
Yeah. In the next part, we will outline the future of research support using the Futures Triangle. The Futures Triangle is a simple tool developed by Sohail Inayatullah to map present, future, and the past to explore the spaces of the probable futures. The basic idea is that there are three dimensions that shape the most likely futures. So on one hand, it's the weight of the past, what's holding us back. The push of the present, so the developments that are currently going on right now. And the pool of the future, so what's the beautiful perspective that we want to move forward to. And the tension and interaction between these three forces in that triangle create a space within that the most likely future plays out. We start with the present, because it's a beautiful present, and because the present already contains many factors that are driving that change. These influencing factors could be of social, technological, economic, or political in nature. For example, the best known political change factor was that John F. Kennedy in the 60s decided to send a man on the moon, and that drove a lot of change in all those aspects. To find out what those influence factors are today, we want to know from you what trends in research technology and politics, political winds are changing the future of research support in libraries right now. Can I start with Aaron?
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, I missed out. It started to slow down for a while before the question. Could you repeat the question again?
Yeah, no problem. We want to see what are the driving factors today that we see in the libraries, in the university libraries. So what is driving change? And you can think of technological factors like AI, but also maybe political factors or economic factors. Or, for example, we have a problem in Europe that we have an aging population. And that has a certain effect on public libraries, for example. And maybe you can think of the drivers that are currently influencing how we shape research support today.
I don't really comment on Europe because more than anything was happening in Europe. In terms of like economic kind of things that are happening, I guess for libraries, one of the trend is the push towards open access. Even in Singapore and Asia, we are hearing about how Europe and parts of the US signing transformative agreements. And in Singapore, the libraries have been discussing together with the funders in Singapore on whether we should actually move towards providing open access. The other trend that I see, obviously, is the technology trend. The whole idea of large language models have exploded. And there's this whole idea that everything can be changed. For example, I was recently trying the ChatGPT Plus, and I could actually upload a set of data sets and ask it to clean up the data set so it could do research data management. So it seems like the possibilities are endless in terms of technology. And there's definitely a trend that's pushing. So a lot of librarians, archivists, a lot of researchers are sending me emails asking me, can I do this? Can I do that with machine learning? So this is definitely something that's definitely coming for us, for libraries, I would say. And combined with the trend about open access, it leads to even more interesting questions on whether if most things are open access, would these language models be powerful enough to actually extract and write a full literature review or find answers by searching through it? It might be possible that the act of writing a literature review might change in the next 3 to 5 years once technology gets good enough and once there's enough data. So one of the things I've always been thinking about is how the trend towards open science, open data, coupled with the increased power of machine learning might actually lead to a revolution in the way we all do research and science. And how would that affect, of course, libraries, academic libraries, as well as researchers? Yeah.
Yeah, interesting view. These are indeed interesting drivers that where you create open access content that is a corpus that can be used for training AI or be used by AI. And then you can imagine that you do science in a whole different way in the future.
It's not just open access, it's also the push towards open science. It used to be a lot of parts of the scientific process used to be hidden. Now, as we move towards open science, protocols are made open, data is made open, peer review is made open, practically everything is made open, right? And now you can throw all your machine learning and your language models on these parts of the processes. So who knows what might be possible? Either it can help you do checking, or you can find error checking, right? The more we expose, the more of the science process we expose, the more these machine learning and language models have a chance to be able to figure out something interesting. Yeah.
Yuri, what is your perspective on the drivers of change today?
Yeah, so I agree with Aaron that a lot of these technological advancements will seriously affect the libraries. On the other hand, I also am quite hopeful that these things are happening. People sometimes forget that before there were universities, there were libraries, and we've been around longer than almost any institution. And I think libraries have proven that they play an essential role in society and that we are able to adapt over longer periods of time. I'm not as scared as some might be of the disappearing job of a librarian. I think these new technologies will be adapted into library work and library life, and that we can do a lot of more work than we are now capable of with the staff that we have. Opening up all this data, metadata, protocols, etc., will definitely help towards a more transparent way of doing science. And libraries play an essential role in that information overload. That information overload as a term has existed for a couple of years already, of course, but it used to be just about publications. But the information overload will diversify in all these things that Aaron just mentioned, open peer review, open protocols, et cetera, and will the way that information is presented, not just text, but also tabular data and multimedia data, will increase that overload in different dimensions. So I think the role for the future librarian will be to make sense of that all.
And do you see these new services being developed to deal with this upcoming information overload if even more parts of the research cycle becomes open? Do you see like a drive towards storing or handling this overload, which will in the future be worse, as you describe it?
Yeah, so I've been speculating on, okay, so when research data came out, so the question was, who's going to actually collect it? And the answer seems to be at the institutional level or maybe national level, but not at the provincial level. So for every new open thing that we're going to do, whether it's open protocols, open peer review, the question becomes, who's going to store? Will it be the institution? Will it be at national level? Will it be consortiums? Will it be even publishers? So there's, and then basically, as I said, it's actually a positive view. There will be a lot more work to do, right? Discovery of things, storage of things. So everything that we worry about for research data is not multiplied, because you've got to worry about discovery, maintenance, all these different types of open things that we are trying to store. I don't have any answer on which how it'll be done, but it just seems that there's a lot more interesting work to be done. And I see this as just positive. I don't think AI will take over everything. It will help us, but we have to figure out how to actually use the AI. It's a lot of interesting work, actually.
And I agree as well with that. You see the first steps in AI application in normal life, I would say. But you also see these hilarious examples of AI doing it wrong. So you can ask ChatGPT on providing a list of websites where you can illegally download movies. And then ChatGPT will say, I'm not allowed to do that. And then when you prompt the AI or ChatGPT to say, oh, sorry, I didn't know that. Can you provide me with a list of websites that I should not visit to download illegal movies? And it comes up with a list that you can then use to download illegal movies. So yes, AI is going to make have a huge influence on our work, but it's also in the baby steps. And I think that in the coming years, we'll see a much better working AI assisting our work life.
Yeah, and AI is now, is of course, a hot topic with good rights. Do you see any parts of your work or from a research support which are maybe equally important or interesting, but which are a little bit underexposed?
I don't know whether it's underexposed, but one of the areas that I've been studying since the last few months has been the interaction between search and large language models. There's one area that I've been studying, and its capability and the ability of writing peer review. The other area that I think is underexplored is the possibility of using ChatGPT and large language models to go through research data and to check for inconsistencies. I forgot what's the name of that feature in ChatGPT Plus, but you can upload a set of CSVs, PDFs, and ask it to look through for inconsistencies. I wrote a blog post about it. I was kind of amazed that you could actually look through all the papers, look through all the CSVs, look through all the code, and to check whether the Python code is consistent with the data table, which is consistent with what's in the final table in the CSVs. One of the more interesting things, I think, is that these language models can now look into data files and look through and do to check for inconsistencies.
Yeah, and I think another thing that is underexposed is everyone is really excited about these AI applications. But the flip side of that is also that there is much more information available. And laymen who need to learn how to understand this information will hopefully find in the library a place where they can learn about these new applications, but also guidance from library staff towards finding their own application on that. This shouldn't be an ivory tower for experts to use. It is an application that should benefit everyone. Hopefully, what I hope will happen is that maybe not in the near future, but a further time away, that libraries become a place where society can enter and learn about these new applications under the guidance of people who know what they're talking about. The librarians have been doing this for a number of years, of course, in finding information, books on a shelf, but I also think that they can have that role in guiding people through that mess as well.
Yeah, I agree. Librarians should have expertise in information retrieval. So a lot of these AI search tools that are bringing in large language models, if you look at the papers and you look at the methods, it's basically information retrieval all over again. I can add that in my university, we actually did a hackathon recently where we actually invited students to actually try to use large language models to improve researcher and library experiences. And we actually provided support in terms of the use of the APIs, as well as, of course, library data sets and APIs that they can use to combine together and to come up with ideas.
I learned a new concept for AI. There is a group who wants to promote a data nutrition label. So like a food nutrition label, but then for data, to prevent training AI with garbage data. I could imagine that in this upcoming trend for a growing need of correct, clean data to feed AI that data, we need to have a data nutrition label. And perhaps there is a role for libraries to check, indeed, what you said, Aaron, whether the outcomes of the data aren't any inconsistencies in. Is that something that you could imagine that libraries could take up as a role?
I actually agree, because I've been reading the latest papers on language models. It seems that the ones that people are most famous are using, like ChatGPT, they are probably overtrained, as in they basically are too big, basically because the quality of the data they use is mostly rubbish. Right, so people have been showing that smaller models based on high quality curated data like textbooks get equally good performance or even better performance, even though they are trained on smaller data. So definitely I do see a role for librarians to actually curate good quality data to create all these language models.
Yeah, there was an interesting talk 2 weeks ago in the Open Science Fair in Madrid, where NASA presented there, and they actually did this. So they trained their model on a curated set of data, which was curated by people, so manual labor, which kind of negates the idea of efficiency. But they were able to show that they had a good working LLM trained on a scoped corpus that they first curated. The question from the audience, of course, came, don't you introduce a bias because of that setting of a corpus? Which is an interesting thought, of course, but
yeah, this is a question about bias. But of course, if you pick so-called everything on the internet, there's also a kind of bias. So I'm not sure. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. If you also only look at the Scopus corpus, for example, you have also a bias on selection of journals that are in there as well. So to move on, because we're thinking a little bit now on the future, right? So let's go ahead in looking at the future. In this section, the pool of the future, we are going to outline the ideal and the less ideal future. This will help us to find our way towards it and get a sharper image on how the future exactly should look like.
Yes, your area of expertise or your work, what kind of visions do you have about the near and a little bit less near future that you're working towards?
Yeah, so this is an interesting question, because we are currently working towards a reorganization of our university. The current thinking is that research support is a very broad area. We want to support most as many areas as we can, but at the end of the day, we alone, the library, isn't sufficient. So right now, we are partnering with research associates, research assistants, and some faculty to set up a network of expertise. And the idea here is that the library would be the neutral party that is actually coordinating, trying to identify expertise in particular research methods. And of course, the librarians themselves would have their particular areas of expertise and work together in terms of finding the right expertise to do things. So that's one of the things that we've been working very hard to try to do this. We would need to actually create an inventory of expertise within the library as well as in the university, and to bring people together. So this is something that our research staff are also very interested in doing. So ideally, maybe 5 years down the road, whenever a researcher has like saying, I need help on a certain technique, they will come to the library and the library will be able to identify the right person. That's one of the things that we're going to do. The other thing also, we were also thinking of changing our library structure. Like most libraries, I would say we have a liaison system where each librarian is assigned to a certain subject. Currently, the thinking is that we may want to actually streamline this and move librarians to become more functional specialists in certain areas. For example, we don't think it makes sense to have a librarian, a separate librarian for finance and economics and accounting. When you look at the type of research questions they get, they are more or less similar. But what we want is someone to have expertise in supporting, say, text mining or finance data, for example. So there's this move towards more functional specialists covering research methods rather than on specific domains of subject expertise. So this is the area that we've been thinking about and most likely will be implementing soon.
And Yuri, is this also the picture that you have for a bright future, Ed?
Yes, I think so. I do have a follow-up question for Aaron after my answer, but so my view is more or less the same. I see some parts of the work that is being done now by people in the library can be automated even further than it already is in the library. And that will clear up spaces for more specialists in techniques. I do agree with Aaron that you shouldn't have subject librarians for two specific research areas. I think they can be broadened and that specialists could then work together to answer those research questions. But Aaron, my question for you then is, you gave the example of specialists in text or text and data mining. What other expertises do you see entering the library in the future?
Yeah, so this is actually the difficult part. So part of it is that we've been thinking about looking at people with expertise in, say, qualitative type of analysis. For example, a very common use case we find in our business PhDs is people doing doing qualitative focus groups. So they would actually record, and then they will try to transcribe from the audio to the text, and then they will do coding, qualitative coding of the transcripts. Right, so we're thinking of getting a librarian to specialize in this area. For example, right now there's a lot of powerful AI that can transcribe, like Whisper from OpenAI, that can transcribe from audio to text, and then using tools like NVivo or Atlas TI, which again has AI embedded to do qualitative coding of text. So one of the areas that we've been thinking about is also to have someone specialize in a research method on qualitative coding. And of course, we already have specialists in research data management. But in this case, I'm trying to get the librarian there to further specialize on learning how to actually do anonymization techniques, go deeper than the normal just K anonymity. So again, another area that we get a lot of questions is about how do you anonymize our data, our research data. So these are just some of the areas that we have identified. And we're still trying to figure out which of these areas would benefit from having librarians with expertise in terms of the skills as well as knowledge of cutting edge tools that help. Again, when I read a lot of papers, a lot of language models, ChatGPT, GPT-4, seems to be capable of doing a lot of tasks that researchers used to do manually or using very poor models, when actually just asking GPT-4 would actually exceed the state of art, like things in terms of text sentiment analysis and things like that. Yeah.
Now, I have a follow-up question for Aaron. You mentioned a couple of skills that librarians could specialize in. How do you, in your expertise or in your university, become a trusted partner for researchers on these new domains? Like how did the collaborations on these new topics come into being? How do they find them?
So for language models, right now, the library is existing as the expert on language models. Part of it is because we have this, I've been writing articles that have been shared out to the library faculty, to the faculty in the university for the last few years. And I identified this large language models thing even before ChatGPT exploded. So I've been writing for years about how they work, how they interact with search engines. And over the years, basically, faculty are aware that the library has expertise in that area. So they come to me, they email me, and they will say things like, oh, you clearly know more than me on large language models. And they will basically do things like asking me about their ideas for a grant, or they'll ask me for tools that might do a certain thing. So part of it, I think, for libraries is that once you have the expertise, it's not enough to just say you have expertise, but to keep writing articles, to do workshops. So faculty, I think, they can tell who has expertise and who doesn't. So one thing I've been working very hard is to actually showcase our expertise. And I find faculty are very good at figuring out who actually has expertise by just watching you present or by looking at the article that you wrote. So right now, in terms of large language models, the library is totally involved. I attend a lot of talks on the use of language models for generative. So people are worried about plagiarism and things like that. I can attend any university talk and I can see them mention the library 3 to 4 times every single time. That's one. So we basically, yeah, so that's part of our strategy, not to just have the expertise, but also to provide the services, the tools, and to write a lot of articles, even simple ones, to show that we do understand these areas. Because otherwise, we find that one of the problems we face is that our users, whether our faculty or students, they do not know what we know. So they feel a bit embarrassed to ask us. They're afraid of overstepping. So by writing all these articles, by doing all these workshops, we are telling them that come and ask us on these topics. So that's how we actually try our strategy to try to make sure that our users know what we can do.
So to come to, because of the time, we need to come to a little bit of a conclusion. This future looks like that the library is creates a new branch of skill sets within a university that researchers can come to fetch these new expertise on, for example, anonymization techniques, coding and labeling, automating tasks, more using large language models. So that is the conclusion of how this bright future looks like, right?
Yeah. Can I add on one last thing?
Yeah.
The other thing that we've been trying to do is to get our librarians to be comfortable with coding, right? So this is something that I think is typical, regardless of whether you're doing anonymization, whether you're doing text analysis, it all involves coding. So what we actually did is that we actually have a series of workshops, and our librarians are now actually asked to go to certain schools to teach them how to use R for stats, right? So this is actually very popular for certain schools like social sciences, where they want to move from SPSS to R for stats. And we actually hired one or two very good librarians who love to code. And the good thing is that these two librarians are actually being assisted by other librarians. So right now we have a group of librarians who are actually interested in coding. Only two of them are very good, but the rest are also slowly learning. And at least they're not afraid of the idea of coding. They're not afraid. They know the idea of using a Jupyter notebook. So again, I think that is actually very critical for librarians who do research.
Yeah, thanks for that addition. Yeah, so it's learning a new language, and apart from English, librarians should also learn Python or R, and that can help in all the other processes for the new skill sets that are upcoming that we just mentioned before. That's a very good addition. Just to mention, I try to code, but I use ChatGPT now to work out code for me. So I built some scripts, so I got over the anxiety to code. And this large language model helped me understand how to structure it and that kind of stuff. So it's basically also a tutor that can...
Exactly, right? So if you don't know any coding at all, ChatGPT doesn't help you. But now, if you know a little bit of coding, ChatGPT helps you a lot. So
yeah.
That's what I've been trying to tell the librarians as well. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and it's also it's really lowers the barrier to enter the coding experience.
Exactly.
Also for librarians, it's not hard to do anymore. So you have an idea, you put it in the prompt, ask for it to write code, and start discussing with ChatGPT what to do next.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Good. Do you have also a grim image about what future we don't want to reach into?
I think the grim image is that libraries decided this is too technical. We're not going to do this. And more of it get outsourced to AI or some other research center. And the role of librarians decreases. I know there are some librarians who feel that we should go back to the basics, which is recommend resources, right? Why are we learning all this expertise? But I think if we really go back to, say, go back to the basics, as they say, that means just recommend resources. I think increasingly this role will be less and less useful. Like, for example, all these search tools, all these recommender tools, they'll be able to recommend the right data set, the right database, much better than any librarian in the future. I think expertise is the way we should go. But my worry is that librarians just get overwhelmed by how different such skill sets are and want to stay with what they are used to now. But if that happens, I think the influence of the library, the academic library, will definitely be a lot less.
Yeah, agreed. I think topping that up, if that would be the case, if libraries diminish into oblivion because we cannot adapt, then my worry for the future is that large companies will step into that role because they have the resources to adapt these new technologies, and that instead of an open federated system of information distribution, we will end up with companies deciding what kind of information we get to see. So I'm quite hopeful, actually, that we are able to make a change. But if not, then that would be my biggest worry.
Yeah, that's a good point. In the sense that we are outsourcing expertise to these big companies, and they are the ones that actually tell librarians, this is possible, this isn't possible, or this is the right way to do it, or this isn't the right way to do it. And the library doesn't have any expertise to say, no, you're wrong. Yeah, so you're right. That might be a very grim future. And in fact, I would say in certain cases, this might even be happening already.
Yeah, we can all imagine the examples. With this consensus about the bright future and the grim future, let's focus on the bright future. So what are the constraints inhibiting factors that prevent the change and stall us from realizing that future that we want to look forward to? What are the barriers to that? Those barriers could include vested interests, organizational structures, policies, laws, regulations, procedures, economics, that kind of stuff. Historical narratives, I also put in there, that limit or prevent us from moving forward.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind, at least in my university, is the historical narratives. So the idea that we have to have liaison librarians for every single department, that I think is difficult, because you will basically, to work on all this functional kind of expertise, would need to spend time learning such things. So we are currently being held back by the idea that we need to have liaison libraries for every little discipline. So that's one of the areas, of obviously. The other area that has been suggested to me is that the library is stepping into the toes of other parts of the university. There are people who say that we shouldn't actually teach coding because it is something that some faculty do teach. Even though I did suggest to them that the library was invited to teach coding by the School of Social Sciences, it wasn't even our idea. So again, there's this idea that afraid of stepping into toes of other so-called departments. That's the other issue that people are worried about. And of course, money is always an issue. For example, how often can you get a librarian who is a very good coder? So I got very lucky because I managed to find a librarian who actually loved to code. But generally speaking, libraries don't pay that much. If you're a very good coder, you would be enticed to join the IT industry rather than join the libraries. Economic issues is also definitely another thing that might dampen this whole idea. Yeah,
I agree with that as well. I think you need to find people who are not just driven by the salary or the money, but also from a certain ideological starting point. Then they're willing to work in a library where, yeah, the pay might not be as big as the commercial sector. So you really need to want to contribute to societal change for that position. I also think that, as I said, I'm hopeful about the capacity of libraries to change, but I am wondering about the pace in which these changes come to us and if we are able to keep up. And there is a certain pace in your workforce in which you can adapt. Mm-hmm. And I hope that we can keep that pace.
Yeah, I agree. Again, it depends on how you hire staff. If you're conservative and you hire staff that tends to want to be conservative, then it'll be difficult to push the library's pace. On the other hand, if you do select for staff that tend to want to learn new things, that will be easier to actually push the pace of the library. But what I've observed is, in general, libraries tend to select for stability rather than for people who are trying to push for innovation. So that's one of the issues that libraries tend to face. They tend to have a workforce that's capable, but tend to be conservative and less likely to push for change because it's extremely, it's a bit risk-taking. And librarians generally aren't that risk-taking.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that.
All right. We had a very interesting conversation. It's I will do a small wrap-up now, and then we come to some final remarks. So we talked today about the future of research support within the university library. And we talked about the many new roles that the library can take on. There will become an even bigger information overload driven also by open science. And that also means that a library will have an increasingly important role within the university. Contrary to what many people think, that libraries might become obsolete. Now that libraries can have a very bright future. However, this takes on therefore, we need new expertises within the library. And we talked about what those things are. Expertise on coding, anonymization, qualitative analysis, a lot of new things. And there is a danger that libraries can become too conservative and the librarians say, this is too technical. I don't want to go this direction. And then the large companies can step into this role and then make the library more obsolete. So that's, I think, a shout out to library management to be risk-taking in their higher practices.
There you said it. Okay. So finally, Yuri and Aaron, do you have anything that listeners should definitely need to go to, visit, read, or listen? In short, do you have anything to promote at this point? Can you think of anything?
One of the things I do recommend all librarians look at is all the library carpentry, software carpentry, and data carpentry workshops. So the carpentry workshops are all pretty good material, starting material on learning on how to actually do research support in all these areas. Yeah,
that's a very good addition. Thank you. Yuri.
Yeah, Aaron, you should definitely toot your own horn here as well. I would definitely recommend blogs by librarians. And your own is an example of that, but there are many more. And I think there are a lot of people driven by excitement of making this change into the future. And there are some excellent ideas, but sometimes these are also people who are the risk takers, so to speak, in a conservative library setting. And I think these are the people to follow because they will drive the change.
Great. Thank you. I want to thank you very much, Aaron and Yuri, for your expertise and knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.